This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Spiegel and Holmes. Afternoons on the Score.
Dennis, with your head coaching experience and involvement in past drafts, like how you felt like that communication, your input on some of these prospects has gone so far?
Yeah, look, I think it's been outstanding. I mean, I think, Ryan and his group have done a really good job of, going through the draft process, going through the draft board, and given, our position coaches, myself, given all of us, list of guys that we feel like fit what we want to do defensively. And then we've had an opportunity to go in and kind of present our thoughts and ideas to him and his group of guys and personnel. I think the communication's been outstanding.
There's a new sheriff in town, and his name is Ben Johnson. The Bears are getting ready for the draft, which will be starting Thursday night. Our guy Adam Hogue from CHGO does an incredible job. Whether it's the Hogue and Johns podcast, or his work at CHGO, or just when you randomly see him on the street and you say, "Hey, what do you think the Bears are going to do?" He does a wonderful job with that too.
Are you sure? When's the last time you saw somebody randomly see Adam Hogue on the street and you can honestly say they had a great interaction?
I know from people who have run into Hogue on the street and be like, he's as nice as he seems.
That's good. So he's not big-timing anybody yet.
No.
It's good.
He's a star of the highest magnitude.
I know
he
that.
Joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. What's up, Hoger?
That's actually been happening more than usual lately, because with the Kennedy shut down, I've been taking the train every day. So I'm walking down Madison quite frequently, and people stop me and ask me who the Bears are picking, and I just make something up,
dude.
I'm about to do with you guys.
but it's the best, isn't it? Because that question, they want to know what you think briefly.
Kind of.
They really want to tell you what they think. They're so excited, aren't they? Like, we had that when we were out and about the other day. It's like, "Hey, what do you guys think the Bears should do? Here's what I think they should do," is basically how all of that went. People are passionate for it, man. It's Monday of draft week. We need you, Adam. What do you think they're going to do?
I have to say, this has been probably the least confident I've been in, even a certain position group that they might attack. But it's just really how unique of a year this is with the draft. I think, my own personal opinion, there might be like 5 blue chip players. I don't think there's enough blue chip players to get you all the way to 10. I don't think the Bears think that either, which is maybe why all of a sudden you're hearing some smoke and random reports and thoughts about maybe the Bears would trade up, because maybe if they really feel like that blue chip player is somebody that they have to get out of this draft, they would be willing to do that, as opposed to past years where maybe they can sit back and let somebody fall to them. Now, obviously, that'll probably depend on how the first, 5-6 picks play out before they would make a leap like that. But if I had to pick a specific spot where okay, you're telling me they're definitely picking at 10. My gut is telling me that they go left tackle. I just think when you looked at what they've done this offseason, it has been all about fortifying that line. And in some ways, I'm accusing myself of doing something I did last year, which was sort of overlook the offensive line. Well, they've addressed all of it, but I still feel like we're sort of guilty right now of overlooking left tackle, and with just sort of this assumption of, well, it'll be okay. They'll figure it out. Those guys will compete. And instead, I just wonder, based on the actions that they've already given us so far this offseason, if no, let's be aggressive. Let's just make sure this is taken care of right now so we know we have upgraded the line 1 through 5, left to right, all the way before we go into the season.
So we had this discussion a little earlier on the show, because I'm sitting here. I know that in some cases I'm in the minority on this. I think Braxton Jones is serviceable, but I would understand anyone that would say, well, Darnell Wright's pretty good, and look at what you did guard to guard. Maybe he's better. What I don't know is how they feel about, one, him coming back from injury, two, Karan Amagaji. How do you think, or how have they indicated that they feel about these two players?
Well, I think with True Serum, they'd probably describe Braxton Jones exactly the same way you just did, as serviceable. Somebody that they can start, know that he's going to be dependable to, you know, save this sort of catastrophic injury he had towards the end of last season. Like, he's been dependable, he's been durable, he's going to be out there, he's going to be able to play for you, and that's that matters a lot in this league.
It does.
I mean, Charles Leno, I think, what was it, 78 straight starts he ended up making at that position. And we always talked about him kind of in that same light, but, you know, there's something to be said about that durability and consistency, even if that consistency isn't like all pro level consistency, right? So, but
wow, Leno ended up starting 141 games in his career.
Yeah. And he got paid pretty well for doing it, too.
Yeah, he did.
But here's the thing. He's going into year four, Braxton Jones. And so you got to make a decision on him for the future too. And so let's say you roll with him for one more year and it goes great, or even just good. Let's just say it continues the path it has been. I don't know that equals a massive contract extension. And in terms of Karan Amagaji, they like him. They do. They think that there's a lot to work with there, but I don't know that's last year's kind of a wash. I think he's still probably a year away, because last year was just a complete wash. And so I think that the idea that you're going to walk into OTAs, Braxton Jones is not going to be able to play until sometime in training camp. So Karan Amagaji is just lining up as your number one left tackle, and you have this mindset that he's probably not ready to go week one. That's when you add all that out and you actually say it out loud. It's like they can't possibly be done at this position yet.
Yeah, the only thing is this a spot where Poles gets a win and gets to see two of his guys compete for the job, as opposed to Ben driving the bus on so many other things?
Well, and I can meet you on that, except for the problem is that one of the guys can't compete until at least August. And those are valuable reps. And I understand, like, it ultimately mostly matters when the pads go on, but Braxton Jones won that job back when he was a rookie before the pads even went on. It was June. It was like the veteran mandatory mini camp when all of a sudden he's getting reps at first team left tackle. And you're like, well, wait a minute, this fifth round pick has already advanced this far. What's going on here? So they can still learn things about these guys during this time of year when they're just in the building, whether that's strength and conditioning, what they know about the offense, how they can depend on them, even just mentally. So the fact that Braxton Jones is not going to be ready to even practice until possibly August, we just can't lose sight of that.
If it's not left tackle, is it edge rusher? What do you see if it's not left tackle?
Well, first of all, I don't think there's any way. Let me back up a little bit. I don't think there's any way that Will Campbell or Ashton Gentry would fall past the Bears. If for some reason one of those two players is there, I would expect the Bears to take them. I just don't think they're going to be there. So that's where essentially that question you just asked me is where my head's been at okay, left tackle or edge rusher. The problem I'm having with these edge rushers, when you look at, you know, let's just say the top five of them, the consensus five, they all sort of have the red flags. Some of them are, whether that's off the field stuff, whether that's just a lack of production for some of them. Mykel Williams from Georgia is really the only one that I keep going back to, being like, all right, this guy fits the Dennis Allen profile in terms of size and length. He's got the production. Sort of slightly was inconsistent last year, but you could attribute that to injuries. Like, there's an easy excuse to throw at that to justify taking the, taking that player at number 10. I think he's going to be really good. So if you told me they did go edge at 10, that's the guy that I would think that the Bears would draft there.
What do you think is the truth about Jeanty versus the field of other running backs?
Well, I definitely think the truth is that there's a gap there. I do think, and really the gap is the fact that he checks all the boxes, and it's really hard to find a running back that checks all the boxes in terms of speed, agility, contact balance, getting through tackles. He can run it inside, he can run it outside, he can pass protect, he can catch the ball, he can do all those things. Whereas almost any other one of these running backs, and there's a ton of them, and there's a lot of good ones, but there's not another one that checks all of the boxes at this point. They all have, oh, this guy does 4 out of 5 things, but you know what? He doesn't have top end speed, or you know, this guy is not good in pass protection, which a lot of them aren't. It's hard to find rookie running backs that are ready to go at the NFL level in terms of pass pro. So I just think the fact that Ashton Jeanty can do all of those things is why he will be the first running back and probably even gone before the Bears pick.
You got another back you like, you know, maybe one of those 2 second round picks. Well, they got 10, 37, 41, and 71.
Go ahead and tell them the back that you like.
Quinshon Judkins, but some people like the other Ohio State back. You got one?
Well, I like both of those guys. I would lean Travion Henderson between those two. But to me, the guy that kind of splits both of them, that would be my pick there, is Caleb Johnson from Iowa. I think that he is similar to the way I just talked about Jeanty. He checks most of the boxes more so than a lot of the other running backs. Now, he doesn't do it quite to the same level as Ashton Jeanty, which is why he'll probably be a second round pick instead of a top five guy. But man, when you watch Iowa football, and it's a chore to watch Iowa football, when you see them facing loaded box after loaded box after loaded box, and understanding that they can still hand the ball off to this guy, and he's got the patience to just hesitate just enough to let his blocks set up, get through the hole, pick up the 7-8 yards, which is a really productive run. Even without having the top end speed, I just think that this, in a lot of ways, he has what DeAndre Swift doesn't. He has the patience. He has the ability to let blocks set up in front of him and then hit that hole with the willingness to understand, hey, I can just take 5 yards here. I don't have to be thinking 50 every single time, which a lot of times when you're doing that, dancing around, waiting for things to bounce outside, you end up taking a loss on the play. So I just find Caleb Johnson to be very, very productive, and I think he'd be a great complementary piece to what the Bears already have in that room, assuming they can't get Ashton Jeanty.
Be pretty fun to have a Caleb Williams, a Ben Johnson, and a Caleb Johnson all on this team. And then I just Googled, there is nobody named Ben Williams in this draft, sadly, because that would have completed the square. That's no question there. I just wanted to say that.
Adam Hoge of CHGO joining us here on The Score.
I mean, we can make a question.
No, it's better that you don't.
Yeah.
What was your most interesting takeaway from talking to the non-Ben Johnson coaches last week?
Oh, man. I think my most interesting takeaway is how I, you know, got back to my cubicle to kind of digest everything and sort of download what I had to cut for our show or write up, and just realizing the amount of notes I had already that were like, wait a minute, like, this feels different. And I'm very conscious of the fact this time around of not trying to, you know, go all in the honeymoon phase and kind of really look for the red flags. I'm not seeing many. I love a couple things about the staff. One is, first of all, credit the Bears, because the way they set this up, it was better availability with a new coaching staff than we've ever had before, with tables set up, the ability to go around the whole room, kind of meet everybody individually, have some small talk with them too, beyond just the grilling of on the record questions. It just stood out to me, guys, that everybody was speaking the same language already, despite the fact that you have a couple of young guys that came from Detroit with Ben Johnson. You have coaches that he's never coached with before. You have an Eric Bieniemy who's been in this league seemingly forever. And this blend of veteran coaches and younger coaches, and yet here they are just a few months in, and they really seem to be on the same page when they talk about things like accountability or how they're building this offense right now. Even Declan Doyle, who I question that hire in the moment just because of the inexperience, like, he comes off like you understand why he and Ben Johnson are here together. It goes back to Sean Payton and them just really seeing the game the same way. So there's just a level of competency that seems to be there. I like the fact that everybody's on the same page and they're holding themselves to an extremely high standard too, before they even start talking about the standard they're holding the players to.
Yeah, it's clearly the coaches have been coached up already. And that already is a difference from last year. You sat down with Dan Rauschard, the offensive line coach. Anything specific from him jump out to you?
Well, the thing that really stood out to me, and this sort of started getting pieced together as I bounced around the room, about the connections back to New Orleans, the connections back to Sean Payton. But Dan Rauschard, who is, of course, in New Orleans with the Saints as well, he believes in building this line inside out, which admittedly raised my hand. That's how I prefer to see lines built too. And I think the Bears have tried too hard in the past where they're too concentrated on the tackles that they've really left some inexperienced, questionable centers in the middle with young quarterbacks, and they just struggled to get on the same page. And so I really think the investment that the Bears have made here in free agency so far, and we'll see where this goes, but it building this thing inside out makes a lot of sense to me. It also goes back to something Ben Johnson told me in Florida a few weeks ago when I interviewed him. I asked him basically the hardest spots to scheme on the field. And he brought up how challenging it can be to scheme against a really good three technique, because you can bring extra help to the outside, to a tackle, bringing this conversation full circle. If they end up running with Braxton Jones at left tackle, it's easier to bring extra help with tight end, chip, whatever it is, to the outside than it is helping when you got a dominant three technique on the inside. And as Dan Rauschard said to me in the conversation I had with him, it's just, you know, sort of basic geometry. That's the shortest path to the quarterback through that A gap, straight ahead, straight up the middle. So if you can fortify that middle of the part of the field, and I ended up circling back with Dennis Allen, defensive coordinator, to get his perspective on the opposite side of the ball, and he said the most valuable real estate on the field is in between the guards and the 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and whoever wins that space on the field typically in a football game wins the game. And so the Bears, it's obvious, this goes back to what I was just saying about these guys all being on the same page and seeing the game the same way, both on the offensive side and defensive side. They're trying to fortify that area on the field between the guards, 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Dan Rauschard said that's the same thing they dealt with Drew Brees in New Orleans. Drew Brees and Caleb Williams are not far off in terms of their stature, their height, what they've been dealing with. It's much easier to step up in the pocket when that's clean and deliver passes on time, which obviously we saw Drew Brees do throughout his career.
I appreciate you saying that you don't want to fall in love too quickly with everything around the new staff. Like, I think that's a very important thing that all of us have to keep in mind. That being said, when we asked Robert Mays a couple weeks ago about Dennis Allen, he got giddy. He did the hub laugh because he thinks he's so good. I know that you've done a deep dive on Dennis Allen. What did you find on that deep dive about what he is and what he can do for the Bears?
Well, it's not all that dissimilar from the way I've been telling our friends down in Dallas now that they have Matt Eberflus as their defensive coordinator. Like, some of these coaches can be really, really good coordinators that are just not the best head coaches. Mm-hmm. And I think that Dennis Allen, for, you know, it sort of gets looked at a certain way because it hasn't really worked out as a head coach in two different opportunities for him. But meanwhile, consistently, you look at his defenses and they're always performing really, really well and seemingly getting better each and every year. And then I do think the big difference between this, if from a scheme perspective, where I just personally prefer Dennis Allen over what the Bears did under Matt Eberflus, which was mostly good stuff defensively, but I like a more aggressive style defense. I like to see just a little bit being a little bit more exotic instead of just sitting back and kind of waiting for your opponent to make a mistake. You can win a lot of football games that way. Don't get me wrong. But just for me, I like to be the aggressor on defense. And what it's going to end up doing, though, is it's going to put more stress on the secondary. But if we're going to sit here and say for a couple years now that the secondary is the strength of this defense, well, damn, that's okay. Like, let those good players play that way. Let Jalen Johnson, for all of his talent, play press, man up, get his hands on the football more. And one of the things I loved hearing from the coaching staff last week, talking to Al Harris, who's now the secondary coach, he has never coached with Dennis Allen before. But Dennis Allen said, look, I'm just paying attention to some numbers here. And you look at who's been leading the league in interceptions over the last 4 or 5 years, it was the Cowboys under Al Harris. And sure enough, I think it's 78 interceptions from Cowboys defensive backs over the last 4 seasons. That's most in the league easily. And so he said, I want that guy to coach my secondary because I want them to get the hands on the football more. And so you just talk about kind of putting these pieces together. A lot of it, and this is what I keep coming back to, guys, this entire offseason, a lot of this is making sense. They're doing obvious things. And that's, to me, the biggest departure, because in the past, you're like scratching your head too much. Like, why are they doing this? Well, just a lot of moves this offseason, whether it's the coaching staff or the players they've added so far. It's like, oh, that actually makes sense.
It's funny too, Hoger, because look, I spent the majority of my career as a beat reporter covering a defense that did play it safe. Like, and I'm using air quotes for those who can't see me on Twitch, but they had really unique players that made the play it safe defense work in a way that we don't see it usually work. You had Tommy Harris, you had Brian Urlacher. So, like, those things change the way that it looks. I'm kind of with you on this. And I had a wonderful conversation with Kirby Smart down at SEC Media Days last year about how defenses do need to be more active. The defenses are, it should be about them putting pressure. And I don't mean sending guys on blitzes, but showing them different looks and making it harder for the offense to function. And I wonder about that. I wonder if they're the best coordinators in the league, and I know Vic Fangio is one of them. I wonder if you're being honest, like how much is I want to affect the offense versus how much is I want to play it so that my offense still has a chance no matter what to win a game.
Well, and I think it goes back to what Ben Johnson has been talking about a lot this offseason too, which is, you know, we have so many coaches in this league preach takeaways. Don't get me wrong. Takeaways are very, very important. There are definitely numbers to show you win the turnover battle, you win the game. I also saw the Bears quarterback last season go 9 straight weeks without throwing an interception. The Bears lost, I think, all of those games.
Yeah,
or most of them.
Yeah.
So Ben Johnson came in here on the first day and was like, no. You know what matters? Quarterback play. And he went into more depth and said EPA in the passing game, this is what really matters. And by the way, part of all that is takeaways too, or turnovers, right? So it's still baked into all that, but it just goes beyond. We can't just sit there and go, oh, we're going to sit back, let the other team make a mistake. We'll eventually take the ball away, or worst case scenario, we'll hold them to a field goal. No, be the aggressor. Even when I'm coaching special teams, I'm set the tone, guys. Like, be aggressive right away here on the first kickoff. Hit somebody, take the ball away. Just be the aggressor. You control the narrative in the game. I just feel like when you're playing more of a passive defense, and again, I'm not, there's plenty of, you just brought up one, of course, with the Bears when they had different personnel and they had Lovie Smith where it worked a lot. I get it, but it's just sort of your flavor. My flavor is not to just sit back and wait. It's be the aggressor, and I think that that's going to be one of the biggest differences with Dennis Allen, even though, for the most part, the base of the scheme is the same.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch that aggression. Adam, you're the goods, man. Thanks for the time. Keep killing it and be nice to the public when they greet you on the train.
I'll keep trying, guys. Hey, enjoy the draft this week. It should be fun and I think unpredictable.
Adam Hoge from CHGO joining us. That's a lot of fun. He's really, really good. When we come back, something happened on this weekend that we didn't really get a chance to talk about.
Dude, it was a straight up Friday news dump and a long Cubs game buried it even more.
We should discuss it. It has to do with the Bulls and their personnel. We'll explain next here on The Score.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Spiegel and Holmes show flashback.
It was me going to him because when he first got here, he just kept kind of saying, like, you know, what everybody else had told me my entire life is like, you can already shoot. I don't want to mess with your shot. You can already shoot. I don't want to. You're a really good shooter. I don't want to mess with your shot. And I was like, I'm a good shooter, but I want to shoot 40%. And I hadn't done that in my career. It's actually grown into a really great relationship. I got to know him a lot. Even as he got three sons, I got to know him a lot. So he's a really, really good dude. And you know, he's always someone I can count on.
That was Coby White with us here on The Score talking about Peter Patton. And now Peter Patton is no longer a part of the staff. It's the Spiegel and Holmes show. Ricky O'Donnell does an incredible job of covering the NBA for SB Nation, and he was kind enough to pick up the phone and hang out with us here on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Ricky, thanks for joining us. This move doesn't make sense without there being more context to it. From afar, what's your thought of this move, considering where the Bulls are at as a franchise?
Yeah, it's a gigantic mistake and a self-inflicted wound by the Bulls. To me, Peter Patton was the most competent person in the Bulls organization last year. This team has been pretty bad at shooting over the last three seasons, and that completely changed around this year. The Bulls finished number three in the NBA in three-point makes, also number three in three-point attempts. Obviously, a lot of that is getting DeMar DeRozan off the team, losing such a mid-range heavy shot maker, and playing more up-tempo, prioritizing taking more threes. But I think the individual improvement from a lot of the key members of the Bulls roster is what really stands out to me. For one, Josh Giddey. The last 2 years in Oklahoma City, Josh Giddey combined to make about 18.5% of his pull-up threes over the previous two seasons. So Giddey is a guy who plays with the ball in his hands all the time, could not beat the defense by pulling up for three. This past year, hit 34% of his threes on pull-ups off the dribble. Really encouraging sign for his future, I thought. He also set a career high 38% from three on the season. Look at Matis Bezelis, who just shot 28% from three on the G League Ignite. For the Bulls this year, as a rookie, 36%. That's just around league average. I think that's an incredibly successful shooting season for Matis Bezelis. And then Dalen Terry. well below 30% his first 2 years with the Bulls. This year, 35.6%. You know, made more threes this year than he did the previous two seasons combined. So I think that Peter Patton was really good at, you know, his small lane with the Bulls. And to me, it just doesn't make much sense to fire him unless you're going to, you know, spend that money and try to hire someone else. But the Bulls had some pretty good results with Peter Patton, so it doesn't make much sense to move on from him.
Good specifics there about young players getting better under the tutelage of the shooting coach. Ricky, you're one of the first people I thought of when this firing happened, because I remember your tweet from June of 2022. I'm looking at it right now. The Bulls badly need to invest in a dedicated shooting coach. The team was dead last in three-point rate last year. AK's three draft picks, Pat Williams, Io DeSumo, Dalen Terry, all came into the league with shooting as a weakness. Teach those dudes to shoot threes and their future looks much brighter. And then they do it, and it works. So it's just... It must drive you crazy to see this guy who's very good at this skill, who you knew they needed, now be sent on his way for specious reasons that we don't really know about at this point.
Yeah, and according to Joe Colley, who wrote it up at the Sun-Times, I know you guys had Joe on the station earlier today, basically it seemed like it was because Peter Patton sort of had some dissenting opinions about how the Bulls were going about their rebuild. Well, guess what? Everyone in the world does, besides for Arturis Karnišovas. And I think that that's something that bad leaders in every industry just seem to have in common. Narrow-minded approaches, surrounding themselves with yes men, and forcing out people who don't toe the company line. And it seems like the way that this has been reported that, you know, maybe Peter Patton, also Steve Weinman, who was also fired from the Bulls about 6 weeks ago or so, that was reported around the same time as the Patton firing, just weren't really on board with the way Arturis Karnišovas has been handling this rebuild. And honestly, why would you be? It's a team that is just completely mired in mediocrity. Arturis is completely delusional in terms of how he's going about this rebuild. We heard him speak into a microphone after the trade deadline and say, you can win an NBA championship with 9 or 10 good players. I mean, is he gaslighting us, telling us that? There are no examples in NBA history of a team winning with 9 or 10 good players and not any true stars. Even the 2004 Detroit Pistons had Hall of Famers up and down that starting lineup. So it would stand to reason why some members of the front office and some members of the organization are not on board with the way AK is running things. And it seems like it's costing some people their jobs.
It struck us weird, Ricky, when we've talked about it over the last couple of years, where it looks like, well, there's an opportunity for the Bulls to at least try to bottom out. It's almost impossible in the Eastern Conference because of how bad the Wizards are, for example. But even this past year, there looked like there was an opportunity for the Bulls to, I hate to say this, but there's no nice way to say it, not try as hard to win, to get themselves to just a play-in. For some reason, that seems to be okay for AK, and I'm trying to figure out what the motivation is, and I don't have a really good answer to support it. Is there anyone in the NBA that you've talked to that looks at what the Bulls are doing and says, okay, I can see how they're trying to go about this?
No, not really. The Bulls have set a goal for themselves that no other organization in the NBA would deem a goal worth chasing. They're just trying to get into the playoffs. And when Arturis talks about being competitive, I think you really need to define what does competitive mean. Because in the NBA, 53% of the teams in the league make the playoffs every year. The Bulls play in the JV Conference. The East has been significantly worse than the West ever since Michael Jordan retired from the Bulls for the second time. So Arturis trying to like pat himself on the back for this team potentially getting in line to be the 8th seed in the East is just a completely pathetic goal and is something that should absolutely get him fired. He's totally unfit to have this job, and nobody else is really taking this approach in the NBA. And the thing is, you don't want to tank forever. You don't want to tank in the wrong years. But the Bulls were very well set up to go after Cooper Flagg in the 2025 draft. And then in 2026, an even stronger class, three potential number one overall talents in that 2026 class. Cameron Boozer, Carlos Boozer's son, going to Duke. The guy's a complete stud. You also got A.J. DeBonsa going to BYU. You got Darren Peterson, going to Kansas. Those are the three front runners in 2026. And once again, it seems like the Bulls are just not going to chase those top end talents. They kind of set the direction and the course for this rebuild by trading Alex Caruso for Josh Giddey. They could have gone after a more pick and prospects based package in return for Caruso, who had more trade value than anyone else on the roster. Instead, they went for Giddey, who is a solid player. He's a high floor player. He did make some improvements this year in meaningful ways, like with his pull-up shooting under the tutelage of Peter Patton. But in general, having Giddey on the team and playing at this pace, you're just not going to be in position to draft a blue chip prospect. And for Arturis to think he can build from the middle, like, yeah, it's possible. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was the 11th pick in the draft. Giannis Antetokounmpo was the 14th pick or 15th pick. Nikola Jokic was taken in the second round. Well, nothing we've seen from Arturis to this point in his tenure tells us he can evaluate talent at that level. You're much better off trying to get a no-brainer player like Cooper Flagg, like Cameron Boozer. And the Bulls just have no interest in it because to them, success is just making the playoffs.
Ricky, great stuff, man. Thank you so much. We'll do it again. Keep rolling.
Thanks.
You got it. It's Ricky O'Donnell. Lawrence, I was going to play this for him, but I'll just play it for you because I think he said it there. Nobody else in the league has this plan. Nobody else in the league approves of this plan. When Arturis said this the other day about the timeline.
That's the goal. A shrinking timeline is basically to have a faster turnaround. But I think there's a lot to like about this young roster.
Shrinking the timeline. Shrinking the timeline is a euphemism for let's just be okay. Let's just be okay. And the play-in is always within reach in the godforsaken Eastern Conference. It has to come from above that this is okay. Because nobody else in the league is doing it or approves of it. It has to, Arturis has to know that this is okay.
Okay, so then, you know what? I don't even want to spend any more mental anguish on this because it's like, why would you then make a move? Like, whatever.
I mean, something we love here is mental anguish, so do one.
It just seems like that gets in the way of the thing that you want to do, which is not anything that anyone else in the NBA is doing anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But whatevs.
It can make you crazy.
Whatevs.
That's for damn sure.
Let's talk about Kyle Tucker.
Yeah.
Hey, Kyle Tucker, what's your number? We'll explain next on The Score.